perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.
Welcome to the second half of episode 4 in the 2025 Steve Chong Show, part of Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus community radio station for Simon Fraser University. I'm your host, Steve Chong. There will be a feature on the SFU Red Leafs hockey, followed by a long interview with the Burnaby Mayor, Mike Hurley, in the next 30 minutes. First, with the Red Leafs hockey. On January 27th, Ryan Sandrin, a former goaltender in the SFU men's hockey team, was congratulated by the SFU Criminology Program for being chosen in the Academy of Criminal Sciences Doctoral Fellowship Program. Tonight sees the independent Red Leafs visiting the Lindenwood Lions, an NCAA Division I hockey team at Senatan Community Center in Maryland Heights, Missouri, where the puck drop is at 5:10 Pacific Standard Time.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
Now I'd like to play my interview with the Burnaby Mayor, Mike Hurley. At this time, this is a 24-minute plus interview. Hello, my name is Steve Chong, and today is January 30th, 2025, one day after the Lunar New Year. On the line, I have
Mayor Mike Hurley from the city of Burnaby.
The Burnaby Mayor, Mike Hurley, was first elected back in 2018, followed by being acclaimed in 2022. Before entering politics, Mike Hurley was a Burnaby firefighter starting in 1988, during which he served as the Burnaby Firefighters Association Vice President, followed by being the President and also the BC Provincial Firefighters Association President. Mayor Hurley, thanks for the interview this afternoon.
Glad to be with you, Steve.
First of all, tell me about some of Burnaby's accomplishments in 2024.
Our accomplishments were many in 2024. We broke ground on a new RCMP headquarters, which has been long overdue. We broke ground on three new recreation facilities that are going to be amazing and serve our community for many, many years. And we also made great progress in our housing fronts. Although the disappointment things of the year were the changes by the provincial government that in some ways stymied the efforts we were trying to make to move housing along quicker and more affordably.
While Burnaby has become a great place to build, where I have seen multiple high-rises under construction on top of completed buildings that cast huge shadows on low-rises in the Metrotown neighborhood where I'm a resident of, there have been more homeless people visible via tents under the Metrotown SkyTrain station and at Bonser Park. How is Burnaby City dealing with more homelessness, some of which may be due to demo evictions of low-rises for skyscrapers?
Well, I don't believe that with our new policies that should be the case of demo evictions. People are guaranteed a place to live and can move back into the new building. So the homeless is everywhere in the Lower Mainland, in the homeless issue or the unhoused issue. In the Lower Mainland, you'll see it sprouting up everywhere now, and it's not just the Lower Mainland, it's all across Canada, U.S., and unfortunately the world. COVID really contributed to those issues. We have built some shelters. We're providing as much housing as we possibly can, given the help that BC Housing has provided us to try and allow people to move into more affordable housing. We've been hindered a bit by some of the court decisions that say we can't move people along unless we have somewhere to actually send them. So there's a big process that we have to go through to actually find people places to stay, but also to move them along from areas where it makes people feel unsafe. And so there's a process, and we have had to hire five employees, employees that are experts in that field of dealing with the unhoused to try and assist them to get the help they need. So we have to go through that process now due to court decisions. So we're following the law as best we can and trying to help people as best we can at the same time. So it's a big balance there, and more and more has been passed down to municipalities. The mental health help that should be out there is not out there. When people want addiction treatment for their addictions, there's not much going on to get people into that help as quickly as it should. This is something that the urban mayors have really been with the provincial government a lot, saying, please help us to deal with these issues and to get people the help they need when they need it and not put them in waiting lists. That doesn't work very well. So there's a lot of issues out there, and all cities are dealing with these issues, and I'm very empathetic to it, up to the point in where people feel unsafe, and then that's a whole different issue.
How has BC's legislations last year impacted housing problems in Burnaby? Like, specifically, how has it negatively impacted?
Well, I would say, it's actually slowed the process down, because at a whole time of uncertainty, the last thing we needed at that time was to add more uncertainty to what it all means. And people and we are still trying to figure out what it all means, and certainly residents are trying to figure that out too. We believe, and you've mentioned, Steve, the high rises that we have set up on our four town centers, that we have done more than our share of building the residences that people need, although we do need more affordable units, that's for sure. But now the provincial boundaries have pushed that further and further into areas that we're accepting, although they maybe didn't like it, but we're accepting, the density, the high density that we were doing at our town centers. So now that's moving to all over our city. So that negatively affects us from a planning perspective, where we try to plan for all our infrastructure, pipes in the ground. And we try to do that in a planned manner, and now anywhere in the city people can build four or six units, and we're not sure that we have the servicing in all areas of the city to manage that. So that's some of the negative effects. Other things they've done, they've taken away our right to density bonusing as we knew it. That was a big part of our plan to get more affordable housing. To use those funds, or part of those funds, for affordable housing and to build the infrastructure we need. So that density bonusing has been completely changed and will take away some of the funding we had coming into the city to develop more and more needs for our residents. So there's a lot of negatives to it, I understand what they were trying to do, but from a Burnaby perspective alone, I think it has slowed down our housing and will continue to slow down our housing. So, I'm not sure it was all a positive thing.
Relating to Metrotown redevelopments, there was a massive fire on the last November 19th at Camaray Gardens, which destroyed a section of 5715 Jersey Avenue just north of Central Park, 7 days before its $61 million sale was to close to the Belmont Pacific Development Group. Not only is the sale off, but some Camaray Gardens residents are worried that their belongings are being stolen, which also has residents on the sister building, 3925 Kingsway, on edge. All according to Cornelia Naylor of Burnaby Now. What is Burnaby doing to accommodate Camaray Gardens residents?
Well, we for those first number of days, we have emergency services that have ways to look after them for those numbers of days. But after that, it's over to the insurance agencies and RCMP are doing all they can to protect the buildings, but it's really up to the strata and that to have security on site. We will do all we can to support those efforts and to support the people that have unfortunately been displaced. But at the end of the day, the city doesn't have a lot of ways to do that. We have nowhere to move people. But we have tried to help as best we can, and we'll continue to do that.
Sorry, my screen went black. Now I got it back. Now I'd like to shift to policing. From what I understand, the Burnaby RCMP, the second largest RCMP detachment in Canada until November 29th, 2024, is investigating the Camaray Gardens fire as an arson. Tell me more about your discussions with Mike Farnworth, the last BC's public safety minister and solicitor general, regarding the Surrey Police transition, where Farnworth penned a letter to you last January.
Our concerns around the whole Surrey police changeover is the combined units. And that was always shared amongst RCMP, cities with RCMP. And with Surrey moving out of that now, our concern is that it's going to cost us more for those combined services that we were doing. But Mike Farnworth at the time assured me that it wouldn't cost any more, that the province would step in to fill those gaps. And I'm hoping that continues with the new minister. Minister Farnworth did what he thought was right, whether that's right or wrong. But now Surrey are transitioning, so we're going to have to see what happens with the changeover and what it means to us as the largest RCMP force in Canada, I believe, after Surrey is fully transitioned.
What is your opinion of Surrey being open to filling out the Surrey RCMP vacancies at the expense of widespread BC RCMP gaps, which also would have impacted the Burnaby RCMP?
Well, we always have these issues with RCMP leaving Surrey out of it. Surrey's going to do what they do, and I don't like to talk about other cities. We've always had this issue of getting vacancies filled in Burnaby and everywhere else too. So it's a recruitment issue with RCMP, and they're not able to get them through the Regina facility fast enough and get them out on the street. We're continuing to work with the RCMP to ensure that we're getting the right number of officers on the street at all times. We're told that they're going to be able to meet those demands very, very soon, and we're looking forward to that happening.
Also, I understand that Burnaby attended the federal government's assessment of the RCMP's contract policing model between March and December 2023. Explain Burnaby's input in the assessment.
Well, Burnaby's input in the assessment would be, and I wasn't there, it was our staff who were there, but would be relating to how it affects our city and how policing is performing on the streets. But, you know, again, going back to those combined units that all RCMP share, and those are our main concerns. So I'm sure that's what was being put forward strongly by people who attended those sessions. And I'm also sure, the contracting and how negotiations are done by the federal government, where we really have no say in what people get paid or anything like that. I'm sure those were front and center of those conversations as well.
One more question on policing. What are Burnaby's plans for policing in the immediate future with BC's RCMP contract expiring on March 31st, 2032?
Well, I don't think we have any plans outside of staying with our RCMP partners and, ensuring that they're getting their community policing model right for Burnaby. We have very strong relationships with our officers and with our chief of police here, and he's very well aware of our expectations, and he does everything he can to meet how the RCMP perform within Burnaby. I don't think 2032 is going to really change too much unless the province decides that they don't want to renew that and they want to move to a provincial model. But that's a decision for the province and not us.
Furthermore, at the beginning, you mentioned that Burnaby broke ground on the new RCMP detachment building last year, which will be three stories at 129,000 square feet at Ledger and Norland Avenues, and will be replacing the one on Deer Lake Avenue. How does that construction impact the recent cancellation of expanding Confederation Park Communications Center?
They're not related at all. The bidding come in for Confederation much higher than we expected for a facility that was is really dry space. Like, it's not a new rink and it's not a new swimming pool. It should have been. The price is way too high for what, and we have not canceled that project. We have abandoned that contract. But the project will still go ahead at some point. But we need to get it down to reasonable costing for what it was delivering. We talked about the province taking away our density bonusing opportunities, and that was how we were funding all those facilities. So we have to wait to see how their new funding model really works for Burnaby. And at this very uncertain time, we just put a pause on that project for now, but certainly that project is still on the books to get done. So it's not a canceled project, but it is an abandonment of the contract that would have been signed with that developer and designer for that project as they had it.
Correction, I meant Confederation Park Community Center.
Right, and I knew that's what you meant, so that's why I was answering it. The price came in at that at $240 million, and we just believe that's way too high a price for two gymnasiums and a few extra rooms. So that's why we put it on hold for now.
Couple more questions. Shifting gears, elaborate on Burnaby City accepting over $20 million from the Trans Mountain Corporation, ending the city's official opposition to the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion project.
Well, first of all, the expansion project has happened and it's over. So we have to move on to the next phase. My concern is there's five ships a week, five massive tankers a week coming into coming into Burrard Inlet. The oil is fully flowing. Everything in that building, everything up there is now in full operation. So, and I'm still very much opposed to the project, and I'm still very much wish we didn't have the project. And I'll say that anywhere, anytime. We used every tool in our toolbox to prevent that from happening, and it didn't work. So now that project is fully operational, and our job as a city now is to protect the residents in the best way we can. And to do that, we have to have some communication with Trans Mountain, especially at the staff level, to prepare for emergency preparedness. And because we have to work together to provide proper and well-prepared emergency responses. But that does not prevent myself or any member of council from speaking up about anything we see that is wrong up there. I'm still very, very concerned about the safety. I'm still very, very concerned about the 1953 tank, about the propane use down at where the ships dock. So there, you know, I still have very many concerns, but my number one concern now is the safety of Burnaby residents, and to provide that proper safety levels, our staff have to have a communication open with Trans Mountain, whether we like it or not. They're here, and but that doesn't mean we're still not opposing the project. We always did, and we always will. And if someone comes up with a way to stop that oil from flowing, we'll be very happy.
I believe the $20 million plus dollar payment is over 21 years. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
The bulk of the money is paid out over the first 8 years, and then there's some smaller amounts trickling in over the next 10, I believe. So I don't have the agreement right in front of me, but I'm only going by memory. So that's how it works, and then those monies will go directly to public safety initiatives. Some of it has already been spent building a emergency access road off of Simon Fraser, and you know, so those efforts will continue, because right now my number one concern is providing as much safety as I possibly can for the residents close to that facility.
Now to the last question. Last but not the least are the high salaries of Metro Vancouver mayors, where you earned $393,075 back in 2023, the highest among all Metro Vancouver mayors, more than doubling your Burnaby mayor's salary, which was $195,393 due to multiple other positions you hold, including being the Metro Vancouver chair, a salary of $109,000, on top of two TransLink commitments, according to Catherine Urquhart of Global News. Furthermore, elected officials are also paid for every meeting held by Metro Vancouver, which has at least 16 committees, according to Jordan Armstrong and Amy Judd, also of Global News. How can you justify the lofty salaries that you and other Metro Vancouver mayors draw with the U.S. President Donald Trump's 25% tariffs on Canadian goods looming on February 1st?
First of all, I have nothing to do with Donald Trump's tariffs that are coming in. The reported, first of all, I only worked as Metro Vancouver chair for 6 months of that year, so the reporting is not true. And I worked the first 6 months as vice chair of TransLink, so it's unfair to add those two salaries together for the full year, because that didn't happen. You know, I took on the chair of the Metro Vancouver because it is an extremely important that we get Metro Vancouver right. It's not something that I really wish to take on, but I felt that I had to step up to the plate and make sure that we get Metro Vancouver. Remember, and probably the most important entity within the Lower Mainland when it comes to human and environmental health. It's a $3.25 billion organization. I don't think that the salary that I would receive for the work I do for Metro Vancouver is out of line at all. And it tops on my Burnaby Mayor salary. I work extremely hard, probably 90 hours a week at least on both those jobs. So while some of the reporting has been unfair in my opinion, including adding two salaries together that never happened, including all my expenses that they compared to the Premier's base wage. So there was a lot of unfairness in that reporting. And I can tell you that I earn every dollar that I get in both positions.
Thank you for this informative session. This interview will air online today and will be on CJSF tomorrow afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for the interview this afternoon.
That was my latest interview with the Burnaby Mayor, Mike Hurley. Now I'd like to get back to SFU Athletics at this time, as there are 7 events today. The Red Leaf softball are playing the Eastern New Mexico Greyhounds at a tournament. Just a minute, please. Their first game is still in progress. Eastern New Mexico is leading Simon Fraser 3-0 in the bottom of 6 with a runner on second and 0 outs. The tournament is the South Central Regional Challenge in Las Lunas, New Mexico. Also, the Red Leafs track and field teams are in the 2025 UW Invite at Dempsey Indoor in Seattle, Washington, one of 3 track and field events, the other 2 in the Boston area. There doesn't seem to be anything else new compared to what I reported during the first hour. Now, with about 90 seconds left, I'd like to provide an update on the Surrey police transition. Yesterday, on January 30th, the SPS celebrated its 60 days since taking command, which occurred on November 29th of last year. The SPS prided itself in taking 18,000 calls for service as they're moving forward with several technology and service innovations. The SPS also has around 950 staff, almost 950 staff. Largely from adding 39 sworn police officers and 391 civilian employees in the last 2 months. At the end of January 2025, the SPS has hired 485 sworn officers along with 464 civilian staff. The SPS Chief Norm Lipinski hopes to hire another 100 officers this year, for an aiming of 810 officers, according to Global News. Thank you for listening to Episode 5 of The Steve Chung Show in 2025 on CJSF 90.1 FM. Coming up at 4, it is Voice of the North.